if that might be what the problem is. Okay, you came to dinner at school.
Yeah, 1925, and I was in the 6A.
And did it look like it does now? What did dinner at school look like?
Well, it was a great big old wooden building, 2 stories high, and I remember that the floors were all oiled, you know. Well, you're not old enough. Neither are you. And then the stairs, the second floor went right up straight. But I was the pitcher on the ball team, and these girls, you know, when you go into a new school, how they all act. And they didn't like me, but because I could pitch, they made me the pitcher. And then I went to the house and the yard opened.
Did you do anything else at Burnett? Was there anything else that
was notable? No.
You didn't. You weren't an outstanding scholar.
No, no, never. I was always in trouble. No, I wasn't.
I wonder.
No, but that was. I mean, I said that. Well, they were real snooty. And you know, when you come into a new school, how they act. And no, that's what they told me. The only reason they put me on the ball team was because I could pitch. But I was raised. I had 4 boy cousins, and I was the baby and the only girl in the family. So I was raised with boys, and then from that time on, the oil field when it was rough and wild. But my mother rented a great big old house in Little Street, 745 East Little, and it was the farmhouse for Frank G. Butler's. And it probably went from the tracks, railroad tracks, down to the slough, which was American Avenue down there. And then back where the Memorial Hospital is now, back up into the train tracks. That was all the farm. But we had...
Did Mr. Butler have a nursery in there?
No, he farmed it here originally. He had a lot of money. Finally built a great big house on East Ocean Avenue. And there were wonderful trees over there, a lot of magnolias and a lot of wonderful trees. I guess that's why I love trees today.
What did he grow on his farm?
I don't know. I really don't know. My aunt and uncle lived, they had property at Willow, and which was Lucas, and now it's Myrtle. And during the boom, they had an outfit come in there. And I can't remember that man's name. But anyway, they had a great big tent, and they'd bring these people up in buses. And we served in the house, folks made hamburgers, or hot dogs for them. And they sold percentages, you know. And you know, a lot of those people sold about 120 or 130%. They did, really. They made their money on their promotion. And a lot of them didn't expect to get oil, but some did and some didn't. But then they finally sold the property years later for just $20,000. But they had to go to all these people that had percentages in that to clear up that title. That was a mess.
Yeah. You were living down near the harbor when I was discovered in Long Beach? I'm from that?
Yes.
What was that like?
The day the Alamedas came in, of course, we came up to see it, you know, at my aunt's at Myrtle and Bill.
And so your aunt already lived out here?
Oh, yeah.
And you came up to tell us what it was
like? Well, we came up, you know, from their place to see it and see all that stuff squirting up in the air, and it was quite thrilling.
Were there a lot of people there?
Well, we were just at their home. We didn't
but were there a lot of people watching the oil well?
Oh, I think so, yes. Yeah. It was exciting. And at that time, of course, Signal Hill was in the city. And Long Beach wouldn't do what the oil men wanted, so they made their own city.
What was it like around the oil well? Was it just all agriculture?
Oh, yeah. Benny Moyle used to tell about, they had, I think it was blackberries on the side of the hill coming down, on the north side. And he went up there as a kid to work for him. It was all Japanese, you know, they had all Japanese gardens on. And he said the kids, they were eating the blackberries, and they let them. And the next day, they couldn't come to work. And then there was a school up in here. You probably heard about that. Case Boomer. I don't remember anything about that, but Pete Osmond had just died. He knew about it, and Dorothy Carter Whittington knew about it, and Millie Campbell, you know Millie Campbell. She went. I think she went to preschool.
Mm-hmm.
She's still up there at the 32nd line. Millie knows a lot about what went on there.
Okay. But you went to Hamilton.
Yeah, I went to Burnett, and then went to Hamilton the year it opened.
Yeah.
And then to college.
And you played there saw Hamilton?
Yeah, and soccer, and, you know, all the athletic things.
And did Hamilton have good athletic teams?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It wasn't, they didn't make it as common as they do today, you know. But, no, I was in all the athletic stuff.
And did your family participate in the oil boom in any way except making hot dogs for,
Well, that was when they, you know, when they first had the promotional thing. And, let's see. Say that again.
Did they participate in the oil boom in other ways?
Oh,
my
aunt and uncle then started a restaurant at Mill and Willow. They moved their house up from the alley up to the front. It was an old two-story place. And ran this restaurant. My mother worked there, and all four of us kids, my two cousins and my brother and I, during the summertime, we'd wash dishes and get $1 a day for it, bought our own clothes to school.
What was the name of the restaurant?
Chef's Cafe. And then they started one at Orange and Burnett. You remember the two-story building that was there, the brick building? Well, that was the best cafe. And then they went out on East 7th when the boom was out there. Oh, and before that, though, they went to 35th and American Avenue, Long Beach to you. And that was open 24 hours a day during the boom.
During the boom in the street, I think.
Yeah, and my mother worked out there.
Yeah. And was there the clientele there, and was it oil working?
Oh, yeah.
Because they had to follow the boom?
Oh, sure. My uncle cooked, and my aunt and my mother worked, and they had waitresses. And we all went up there and ate.
And what kind of stuff did they serve?
Home-cooked food, you know, and breakfasts. And one of the things I remember so well that I always liked was, it's fish eggs and hot milk and on toast. And what did the graveyard steak, you know? Yeah, graveyard steak. But I don't think those days there, well, we didn't talk about hamburgers in those days. But they served steaks.
And they were open 24 hours at all the different locations?
No, just up there at 35th and American.
I wonder how come they were open 24 hours there and not the other places.
That's when it was busiest right in there. No, at the other place, it was in the old house. And that's just, I don't think they served dinners. I don't know. I really don't know how late they were open then.
Was that your first job, working at that cafe?
Yeah. Right. And then I went to work at Charlie Christmas Drugstore when I was 15.
Where was Charlie's
drugstore? At Lime and Willow. It was that two-story brick house. Brick building. You don't remember that. That's why I didn't go on. There's a carpet place in the bottom now, but it's not two-story anymore.
Yeah. And were you a clerk?
I was a soda jerk. I was a jerk! And Ronald Brown, who still lives up on Orange, taught me the fountain. He was there, and I worked till the day I was 18. The day I had to get married. I didn't have to get married, but my mother wouldn't let me get married till the day I was 18. And that was the 23rd of February. And my husband's birthday was the same day.
Could you explain what a soda jerk does?
Kids with all the people.
That's where it comes from.
Yeah. We had all the oil workers, not the workers, but the salesmen and the people that owned the businesses. And they were wonderful to me. And I learned a tough, really. Well, those men were wild. They really were, but they were wonderful people. And I shouldn't put this in there, but at that time there wasn't a Jew in the field. There really wasn't. I forget what the first one was. I think that he bought my aunt's property finally, but it was just one of those things in that time that there were no Jews. about those people, and just lately I've met, well, I met Dick Mitchell. You know who Dick Mitchell is? He owns a lot of property. Well, when I got this thing this last year, that accommodation thing I got, you know, and they had the luncheon for me at the Torrington, so Dick Mitchell was the president then. And my husband worked for Jeff Nelson, which was a supply house on Cherry Avenue, and across the street was Chris Supply. And that was this man's grandfather. You know all about him?
Not all about it, but I know that they had Chris Supply.
Well, and it was called the Midnight Supply, because they stole the pipe at midnight and sold it in the daytime. It was always called the Midnight Supply. And old Dick Mitchell used to come across the street with Jeff Nelson and play poker. And they had their liquor, and they'd get there and get drunk as skunks. And then they had, Charlie and I said, they had a pile of rags over in the corner, and they'd go and lie down, they'd speak a little while, and then start in again. And he said, instead of writing checks, well, they just wrote on a piece of paper and said that they owed each other. And that'd go on for maybe 3 days. And the other night I met Dick Mitchell's father, who was the son of the old man. And I was telling that Charlie said one time, Jeff Nelson had a 12-cylinder black packet roadster. And on these deals, you have to cut this one out.
Okay.
Why, Dick Mitchell went out, and he just peed all along that car. And I was telling his son Friday night about it, and he said, yes, and my dad went out, and he did the same thing with it. Oh, those days were wild, I'll tell you. Those guys were something else. But it was funny to have him bring that party in, but Charlie always told me that, because my husband, Charlie, worked for Jeff Nelson way back. And some of these things have happened in those days. But I have a picture that I took out in front of the drugstore with all these guys. That, there must have been 20 of them that used to come and meet every day. And I told young Dick about him, and he went, I've got to find it. But it was the Wonderleys and all the salesmen. And I remember some of their names, but not a whole lot of them.
What did the Wonderleys sell?
They were big buildings and tough. Boy, they were tough. Now, I think that in the Wonderley family, I think they either 12 or 13 kids, and originally they had come from Russia. But they all were in the oil fields. Big. There was one man that sat bomb that had made money two or three times and lost it. And he finally ran a bookie upstairs over the drugstore for quite a while. And he was enormous. And he'd come into the drugstore. He had one leg on the stool and stood on the other one because he was so fat. And he was down on his uppers. And Wonderley, and I can't think of the other man that had the place across the street coming, but those guys went together and bought him a car, a Buick coupe. And once in a while, like that would take me home in it. And he was so fat that the seat was way back, and he sat in it. But that guy made a lot of money and lost it two or three times. And who else? If I look at that picture, I could name some of them. But they were real wonderful people to me.
Were there other businesses right around the drugstore, or was it kind of out there by itself?
Well, not especially businesses, no, right there. Wonderleys was up the corner, you know, up at the which was Arabella, now 28th Street. And Johnny, thought he lived in my neighborhood too, but I can't think of his name. He was a tough one. A lot of those men would charge things at the drugstore, and old Charlie Chestnut always let him. And this one man, John something, charged everything. And he came in one day and wanted the penny box of matches, and Charlie gave it to him and put it on his bill. And when he got his bill, he came in and paid it, and he said, you cheap son of a bitch, I'll never come in here again. They didn't. Because he charged him 1 cent for the penny box of matches. Those were really funny days.
Yeah. You said that there was a bookie upstairs. Were there different people upstairs at different times? while you were there?
There were two apartments up there, and he had one apartment. And I really didn't realize at that time what all was going on. As a matter of fact, I've learned since that Charlie Chestnut was selling alcohol out of the bookstore all the time, and I didn't know that. You know, the kid, you could do it. But Ron told me that.
You were 15 when you were in the...
When I started, yeah, I was there 3 years. And then I went back in 1938 and worked 39, I guess. And worked 2 or 3 years for him again.
Is that where you met your husband?
Both of them.
Both of them? I didn't realize they were married.
Yeah, I was married. My first husband's name was Ralph Jacob Leifersberger. And my last name was Nye. Three letters, and I went to 13. And he lives in one of the apartments upstairs there. But I met him at the airport.
What were you doing at the airport?
It was when Gladys Don had her first air show. And Drew Robertson lived down the next corner, and I went out there, and I forget how, oh, I guess my mother took us out and left us. And then we ran into Al Hilton, who had the service station at Atlantic and Willie worked there. And he had all these guys with him. So we asked Al to bring us home, and I was in the rumble seat with this big blonde German. And I asked him where his birthday was, and he said February 23rd, and I said, "You're lying like hell." He said, "No, I'm not. That was my birthday." So I married him when I was 18. Lived with him until 1939, I think. 8.5 years, anyway.
And divorced him?
Yeah. I had to get the divorce before they called him in service, and I couldn't get it.
tell about the O'Donnell.
Well, do you know about Gladys O'Donnell's first air show?
No.
Well, you know, originally, the airport was at Chateau Ferry, and then down American and Willow Street. As a matter of fact, Kay Doherty still lives there, you know. And my mother was involved with Gladys O'Donnell and the Republicans a lot. And, well, she was noted as a very famous aviatrix, you know, married to.
Right.
Yeah. Moved in the Montana. And his father, when we bought the property in 1946, and we built and moved in 47, paid $1,000 for our lot. And that was from the original, Malcolm Williams people that subdivided all that north area. And the old man had a place, a funny old green barny place, over on Myrtle, between Myrtle and Olive, above 33rd and below Woodland. And he had horses in there. And I think he had some cows as well there. But he was a tough old boy, the father of Lloyd. And that was the boy that had the money.
Was it college, yeah? You know?
I think it was Jim, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm not sure. And, but Lloyd was down there a whole lot. So that, but the old man was quite a drinker, and he had all the old drinkers over there in that place. He was wild and too.
I thought I wasn't supposed to tell.
Oh, no. No, he showed up, and he got his share, I think. And
oh, yeah.
He threw it like Pluto. He just gambled it and did everything. That's the whole shebang.
Well, Mr. Cockrell said that the well wasn't providing him enough income.
Yeah.
Enough that what he thought was adequate income.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure Cockrell thought it was a fine oil well. He wouldn't have bought it. It was, you know, he thought the income was adequate. So, but it just, you know, kind of...
Oh, that's true. I know. No, he turned up, and they were quite surprised when he turned up. But he got his share.
But he said that O'Donnell provided for him. I mean, he did.
Yeah, evidently. But I don't think the rest of them knew too much about him. Oh, that was fun. You know, another thing while this was off, Lloyd spent a lot of time. Now, listen, they had an office, and it's either on Lime and Myrtle, you know, where they had the business, Gladys and Lloyd. And then at the corner of 33rd and Myrtle, that two-story place, and that was Chevy Irvine's place. He lived there, and he worked for the city. He was in the engineering department, and he had three or four kids, and they were so tough and mean and nasty. But they would go over and be around Lloyd, and Lloyd apparently was having sex with these kids. And Irvine, now this is really off the record.
Okay, with that, I hope you had that off.
Yeah,
but she lived, and maybe something about the Republicans.
She was up above Bixby, kind of above that hospital town. And my friend Jean Turner and her husband lived just south, and he was an FBI agent. And Gladys was there. I think that's when Lloyd died, when they were in that house. And I'm trying to figure that. That may have been Myrtle. I'm not sure what's up about Bixby. I can show you the house. But that's where I think she was when she died, too. But she was present at Long Beach Gym, Republican Club. And my mother was always very involved in it. And she was a cool woman. Have you heard that before? Very cool. Born determined as hell. She was going to get there. She was going to get, and did. And then she had a daughter and a son, didn't she?
I don't know.
Yeah, they had a daughter and a son. Now, I can't think of what happened to the son, but I think that, well, the kids got some money anyway, but there was a lot of money in there. No, that was in the neighborhood, so that business that they were buying kids.
How did your mother get involved with the Republican women or the Republican club?
She was just always very interested in it. I was in it. And then she helped start the North Long Beach Republican Club. She was one of the charter members. And I was in that a long time.
Did she live in North Long Beach?
At one time she did, but at that time she was at 4492 London, where my brother still lives. But no, they were out in California in 67th, Ohio. But there was a real fine group that had that North Long Beach. It was Betty Gilbady and Betty Bixby, not Betty Bixby, one of the Bixby.
Yeah, they never lived out there.
No, but they were involved in that.
Okay.
To get that club started. I can't believe that Bixby's name was. She was there. I might see her husband, but he died first. There is a Betty Bixby, isn't there?
Yeah, but she's almost always lived with Donald Shirley.
I know, and that's not the one.
Yeah, so
because
that's
they lived right. Out, they lived out in Till Hill. Because I've been to her house. She's a redhead. You know, would you know the redhead Bixby? It was married into the Bixby. Originally, she was married to Carl Fry. Now, wait a minute, I'm getting mixed up in another gal. Carl Fry was married to a Bixby and had children. Does that make any sense?
To father, maybe.
Okay. And then my friend that I met, Mildred Fry, married Carl Fry after that. You know about Fry?
I just know that one of George and Amelia Bixby's daughters married Mr. Fry.
Yeah. But then he married Mildred Fry, and she was one of the first stewardesses on the airline. And the way I met her when I was 20 or 21, we had a restaurant in the professional building, a professional coffee shop, and I knew all the doctors, you know, and Mildred Fry worked for Dr. Herzog at that time. But she was a character, a real character. She used to tell about one time when she was running for the train, she was late, and she'd been late the night before, and when she finally got in the plane, she had shoes on the wrong feet. Oh, she was something else. She finally married that real famous florist in Long Beach. She was out in Belmont Shore. His sister still has a place out there.
Conrad?
That's it. Conrad? Or Conrad?
Conrad Florist.
I can't share. It's one or the other. But she married him.
Okay. we'll try to get in that one.
Okay, get back to the
okay. When you were 18, you got married.
Yeah.
Where did you live?
Thurston, California.
You didn't move into the apartment upstairs? Above the bedroom.
No, I lived at 36 in California for 2 months, and then we moved to my aunt's little house out on East First, a 2 blocks this side of the 60 Park.
And is this the aunt who had the restaurant?
Yeah.
How did you get a house on East First Street?
They bought property. They had this four family flat and a little house in back. And they had places, several places in the house on Euclid. And then they had their house at 1210 Ohio that they bought when they were in the chips from their own money. And then Boo came and they lost it all.
And in what case?
They were wiped out. I mean, not the boom, I mean the depression case.
Okay.
And just wiped them out because they had a little bit of money in three or four places, you know, like people are doing today. And when the depression came, they were wiped out entirely. So we lived down there at the time of the earthquake.
What were you doing at the time of the earthquake?
I was making chocolate milk and salmon patties, cooking them. We had my husband's farmer sister here that I didn't get along with. And Ralph was in the bathroom, and he came out into the hall, and there was a shelf up above that I had canning jars on. And when that began to shake, when he came out, he got hit with some of those jars. And Jesse was in front of me trying to get out the front door. And so it kept coming up and he dropped just like that. And my brother had made me a lovely big mirror, and it was on the wall like this. And the lamp was upside down, flashing on and off, and I turned it off. And I got to the front door, and Jesse couldn't get it unhooked, and I just kicked it right out. We got out on the front porch, and the thing I thought was, I'll never see my mother again. The Japanese had got her. Because at that time, have you heard people say that before?
Mm-hmm.
Really, it was just one of those things. I just figured the Japs had it. And then somebody yelled and said, well, the tally over on Broadway, the grocery store was down. So we knew it was next day. And then we had a Model A parked right behind the kitchen off the island. And he said, when he looked out, it looked like somebody's on the back jumping up and down like this. So we got in our car and went over to my aunt. That time we had a restaurant on East Broadway. It was east of Bonaparte.